Today's going to be slightly anomalous, as you will see later on in Mass. But the first anomaly is something I don't think I've ever done before. Namely, I tape or record the homilies every Sunday just to hear what I said, for sure, and to make sure if somebody brings up some cockamamie accusation, I will have tangible evidence of what I said. So I was listening to the homily from last Sunday and was horrified to discover that nearly lurched toward incoherence. I was appalled. Why? Well, I spent a good part of the week trying to figure out where did the wheels fall off, or what in the world happened. I think it was because I thought the text was so important and I wanted to say so much that everything came out in a great jumble. So today I'd like to do a slight repair work on that text and then proceed to what's today. You remember the text was last Sunday was, again, Isaiah saying to the Jews that they were to be the light of revelation to the Gentiles. That was their mission. And I said, therefore, what is going on in Isaiah's thought is that the whole Jewish people were to be prophetic. And again, because we keep being buggered by Matthew's version of prophecy. Prophecy is not prediction. Prophecy is a manner of this guy being convinced that he sees the world the way God sees the world. And that's what I was trying to get at, very unsuccessfully, I'm afraid, last week. So you sit back and say, well, what makes the world for us? That was the issue I was trying to get at and did so badly at. And I believe because we see 3,500, according to sociologists, 3,500 ads a day. You see the London buses go by and you get all this eavesdropping information that you can find out what your neighbors are saying in their bedroom, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But pick up the newspaper, pick a magazine, watch television. For every 15 minutes out of every hour is taken up with the claim that if you do not buy this stuff or you do not own this stuff, that somehow your life is going to be disempowered and you're going to be inferior. What I wanted to say is we're all willy-nilly deeply affected by that vision of things. But it's not just a world of advertising, it's a world of reality TV, of soap operas, although I'd like to accept Downton Abbey from that category. But over and over, we get violence. We get gratuitous violence, people murdering each other with great glee. And that's the furniture of our head, I really believe. The Pope has said in one of those famous interviews that he thinks there's less love in the world. You know, you can't watch the news very long and not be persuaded. Ukraine, Thailand, South Sudan, the Congo. My God in heaven. The prison system here in London, Ontario. The hospital system here in London, Ontario. They're broken. They're broken. In what way are they broken? Because we do not recognize the humanity of those people in jail on Exeter Road, for example. They've slipped below this red line of what makes a human and what does not make a human. To see the world as God sees it, namely the prophetic office, which is something we are to do as a community, not just as individuals, is to stand, as the great William Stringfellow put it in one of his wonderful book titles, as strangers in a strange land. You can't go through the world, I don't think, that we live in, if you're really trying to follow this strange man Jesus, without feeling like an anomaly, without feeling like an alien. And a good part of the time, Why? Because Jesus looked at the world and saw something very different from what I see when I look at the world. I see competition. I see ambition. I see indifference in myself and in others, which I just take for granted. Well, that's business as usual. That's standard operating procedure. That's why I was trying to call to myself, Trojak, for God's sake, look at what has power in your life. What has power in your life? And I suggest that that's one way to find out where we are and how distant we are from this prophetic vision of Jesus. And it's not some kind of romantic idyll. It's bloody business, folks. It's bloody business. Which is what the cross says to us. To do that, to try to establish that as the borders of my life, that as the parameters of my vision of the world, is costly. The great Dietrich Bonhoeffer coined that wonderful phrase, cheap grace. Cheap grace. What's an example of cheap grace? Well, I have some Muslim friends who come over regularly, and we have these big, hairy theological discussions. And last time, Monday of this week past, my friend Ali was saying, well, you know, you look at the Bible, and they're miracles. I mean, they're miracles that prove that Jesus was divine. I said, Ali, you got it all backwards. The miracles don't prove anything. For one thing, it says very clearly in the New Testament the miracles only happen to somebody who already believes that Jesus is somebody special. The Gospel of Mark says very clearly Jesus could not do any miracles in that place because of their unbelief. That he was walking on water and dead rising and lepers being cleansed and deaf hearing, blah, blah, blah. Well, that solves the problem, doesn't it? No, it does not at all. It's rather an invitation to say, how does Jesus look at the world? Lepers, women, homosexual people, people of a different tribe, people of different ethnicity. And he doesn't see strangers. He never saw strangers, apparently. And I said, Ali, that's the miracle. That's the miracle. That's the location of God's activity in the world. When we love each other. When we see strangers and don't see strangers, but see our sisters and brothers, every place. And that's what the prophetic individual is supposed to be, and that's what the prophetic community is supposed to be. That's why I get so angry, is not too strong a word, at remembering Benedict XVI's constant claim that he wanted a smaller, purer church. He wanted to erect all kinds of borders and boundaries and fences, so he could say to himself who's in and who's out. Folks, that's seriously problematic. And we'll come back to that in the announcements where the other anomalous incident is going to appear. So here we got this thing from Paul, excoriating the Corinthians, those crazy people who could, as I said over and over, quoting one of the great Pauline scholars, if the Corinthians could misunderstand anything, they did. They did. They're constantly in the muck-up business. Yeah. And so here Paul complaining about the thing that was absolutely central to his consciousness, his view of the world. I belong to Paul. I belong to Apollos. Who is Apollos? Apollos was another great evangelist, apparently very slick Greek-speaking rhetorician who could sweep people away by his language. Cephas is, of course, Paul's normal name for Peter. What's going on here? The typical human impulse to fragmentation. The typical human impulse to draw boundaries between who's in and who's out, between myself and the other, so that I best know who I am by measuring it in the degree to which I can distance myself from somebody else. I'm not that stupid. I'm not that poor. I'm not that ignorant. Thank God I'm not a woman. That great Jewish prayer when the Jewish men got up in the morning, first thing out of his mouth, God is one. And I thank God that he didn't make me a woman. And I'm not making that up. So we have all of this rubbish, all of this detritus, littering our world, constituting our world, not just littering our world, but constituting our world. And Paul said, no. If we are not aware, at least potentially, or in our hopes, that we recognize that we really are members of each other, that we are incomplete to the extent that we exclude others, then we miss the boat. We don't know who Jesus is. Again, as in so many cases, Mandela had it just right. He said, nobody is free until everybody's free. An injustice to one is injustice to all. That was, it seems clear, Nelson Mandela's worldview, his view of how we human beings are to operate. We don't, of course. I mean, 85 people on this planet own as much as 3.5 billion people on this planet in terms of their money. Think about that. This is not the world that Jesus had in mind. Over and over, Jesus constantly referred us to the reality of the poor, telling us in any number of ways that we really are our sister's and brother's keeper. And if we don't hold that as a central miracle of Jesus' life, we miss the whole process. We're wrong-footing it.